Welcome to the Electric Spirit Podcast, where we dive into all things metaphysical and fun. Here's your host, psychic medium, Jamie Lynn.
Hi, welcome to the Electric Spirit Podcast. I'm your host, psychic medium, Jamie Lynn. Today, we explore the fascinating world of spirit with psychic medium, teacher, and author, Tony Stockwell. Tony was born in London's East End, and Tony's journey into the spirit realm commenced at the tender age of 16 when a friend introduced him to a local spiritualist church. Captivated by the experience, Tony embarked on a path to become a medium himself. Throughout his illustrious career, Tony has made significant contributions to the field of mediumship, working tirelessly to bridge the gap between the physical and spiritual realms. With three television series under his belt, including The Psychic Detective and Street Psychic, Tony has captivated audiences worldwide with his extraordinary abilities. In addition to his media presence, Tony is a prolific author with four books detailing his encounters and insights as a spiritualist medium. He also released four audio CDs on communicating with spirits, angels, and spirit guides, further enriching the spiritual journeys of his listeners. Beyond his creative endeavors, Tony is dedicated to passing on his knowledge and expertise to aspiring mediums through his training courses. Known for his vibrant personality and love of medium curries, Tony Stockwell continues to inspire and uplift countless individuals on their spiritual quests. You can find Tony on his website, tonystockwell.com. Hi, Tony. Welcome to the Electric Spirit Podcast. Glad you're here. And can you share more about your journey into mediumship and how it all began for you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, I often talk about those first sort of jaunts really into that world, but it was a long time ago. It was back in 1985, and I went along to a spiritualist church meeting then, and that was really the only thing that really I could possibly have got to, not recognizing it at the time, that spoke of spirituality, mediumship, psychic work. And it literally was a couple of miles away from where we lived, maybe 3 miles or something like that. It wasn't very far at all. But I was going back to when I walked everywhere, because obviously I was so young. And I would walk, you know, to the church on a Sunday. And it was just the most exciting part of my week by far. You go and listen to the mediums that work there weekly. And that was easier for me because Britain, England, has a very rich tradition of spiritualist churches. And I didn't realize at the time we have so many in the area where I live. So I think there's a spiritualist church potentially every 4 miles. I lived in a little hot spot of an area really where you could watch mediums work. So I went along from the age of 16 until I was 18. And then I was approached by the only lady that ran her own group who created a space just for me. So, I mean, I was so lucky looking back to be invited. And she was an excellent medium and an excellent tutor. And so I sat with her for a couple of years. And then she put me on what we call the platform, which is maybe called the rostrum or gallery style readings. And then I was to give one-to-ones on the stage, standing up, utterly, utterly nervous, I mean, pathetically so, shaking, wanted to cry, blood red. But I kept on going. It felt so right to do it. Mm-hmm. And on the days it went well, it was better than silver and gold.
How did your experience at the spiritual church shape your understanding in the practice of mediumship?
Well, I think this is going to sound a negative, mm-hmm. which I don't mean to be, because I honor the experience I had entirely. It was very helpful and taught me so much, but it also comes with a rigidity. So, you know, you go to that person for 7 minutes, you're presenting a spirit person predominantly in their memory of being human. And then you try to create some kind of heartfelt message. He loves you. She's here. That sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it works. And I understand the evidence of evidential mediumship is something that really changes lives. And I still work that. There's no question about all those years later. But I recognize now where I'm looking at pet mediumship, psychic detection, star beings, therapeutic mediumship, shamanic mediumship, that this is just a massive subject. And when I demonstrate it, I do tend to revert back to my training, which is I have a lady here who's Maureen, that kind of thing. And I love it still, I do. But I think that there is, with it, a lot of preconditioned, if that's even the words, of can I do it more expansively? Oh my God, what would Joni say, which is my tutor, of course, at the time. But I have to honor the experience, but I think over the years I've become far more open in my understanding of mediumship and how far more expansive it is, far more expansive I was led to believe.
As the most recognized British medium working globally today, what do you believe sets you apart from other mediums?
Oh, I don't know. Hard to say, isn't it? I think really the length of time I've done it, where, you know, I've worked with lots of wonderful mediums, you know, and so many of them I've seen as students, you know, over the years, and they're mediums in their own right, there's no question.
Yeah.
39 years on, I think I've just done it, bought the t-shirt, got over the ego, recognized when it's good work, recognized when I have to, for goodness sakes, recalibrate. And so, I think I like to keep a sense of humor. You know, I like to keep it real. I like people to be very honest with me. And I think one thing I would say, because I've constantly had, well, for the last maybe 23 years, mm-hmm. I've had a tour that's literally 23 years old. And so it might consist of 70 theaters in a course of a year, but I'm demonstrating to essentially normal people. So they don't really get it. So you have to present yourself every night with clear information, trying to educate people as you go, but also keeping it light enough. So I was once told that mediumship should never be entertainment, but should always be entertaining. So you do have to learn that entirely. So I think I enjoy the mediumship when it's like that, you see, to an extent where we can have some fun and we can see maybe the fun in the darkness. So the thing that sets me apart, I think, is just a wealth of experience.
You've worked extensively in television and on several series and specials. How do you approach mediumship for the camera compared to live demonstrations?
Oh, that's an excellent, excellent question. Well, the mediumship that I've done has pretty much been obvious, as you say, on occasion where it was on camera, it's been much the same. So I can feel, you know, if I look back now, you know, I did a few TV shows like The Three Mediums at the Hammersmith Apollo, The Palladium with myself and a late friend of mine, Colin Fry. I was a guest on Colin's show, The Sixth Sense. And I think that type of mediumship was as I knew it at that mm-hmm. time. But I also, for TV, I've done other things like Legend Detectives, where I was sent across Europe to Romania and Germany and all sorts of wonderful places to look at legends. And then I did a lot of work on psychic detection, looking for missing people, this kind of thing. And that was pretty much in the UK or thereabouts. I did a show in San Francisco for TV. But I suppose... Yeah. When it's different, such as, you know, detection, legend detective, then you're forced to work differently from the norm, and you present what you present to the screen. So I think, does mediumship need to be different for the camera? No, I don't think it does. You should demonstrate as we normally demonstrate, And where people would say, oh, it's so heavily edited, you know, a TV, a demonstration of mediumship, that's certainly not my experience. Not at all. I think the oohs and the ahs and the time is cut, you know, there's lengthy gaps, I suppose, or if we get a barrage of just getting utterly misinterpreted, that may be cut out. But I think, you know, my experience of demonstrating mediums being televised, it generally is a very good representation of the experience of the medium and the sitter, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. And can you share any memorable or particularly impactful moments from your national and international tours?
Oh, my God, there's a thousand things. One, it's going to sound quite alarmist, but it does stand in my mind more than others. But I was demonstrating up in Edinburgh in Scotland maybe 2 or 3 years back. And it was a normal demonstration at the Arthur Conan Doyle Centre there in the West End of Edinburgh. And the demonstration was partway through. I remember being ever so strange and ever so eerie. And I started to explain to the audience, I just feel ever so strange and not so right here. And then on my left-hand side, to feel a man coming close who was responsible for throwing a lady off of a balcony in Leeds, which is sort of Manchester way of England. And it was such a weird, strange, macabre thing to say. Well, a lady in the audience raised her hand after some time. And I found myself saying along the lines of, I feel this is your father. And her father was responsible for this really awful act of throwing an ex-partner from a balcony in Leeds. I'm not quite sure of the legality of that or whether into prison. I'm not sure. But that was the chain reaction then for me to connect with a child that he'd also murdered years before, who happened to be this lady's friend. And this same lady, the older lady in the audience, was looking for the child's body after all those years. And although I may have probably lost half the listening here with this story, it developed into this huge investigation where then I got to work with Glasgow's CID. I went out with the police force looking for clues, etc. So that, you know, when you say what stands out, there's things like that are altogether dramatic, heavily evidential. You see those things. I was demonstrating just the other day, and this is maybe how I've changed since I've had my own children, but a little baby girl came through. I think she was, memory, 7 or 8. She passed with a brain tumor. And she was coming to her grandmother in the audience. It was a nice, clear connection. And I was trying to say to the grandmother, she wants to say, you know, she loves you. And she, just before she died, she was able to say the words, I love you, Nanny. Well, that would have been simple, wouldn't it? But I got to, she wants to say, and I just burst into tears. And so I'm now this aging, overweight medium, sobbing at my audience. And it took me some time just to get myself back into a sort of a state of composure so I could carry on with this message. And that stands out because I think in my youth, I might have said that type of information quite easily. But I do wonder, you know, living life and spending more time upon the earth sometimes breaks you a little bit, you know, with your own personal sagas and worries and death of loved ones, etc. Makes you so much more empathic and also so much more emotionally damaged that sometimes trying to convey an easy message of thought becomes an emotional episode. So listen, I could go on all day. There's a thousand different demonstrations in there somewhere. The dramatic stay with me and the emotional stay with me.
Audience members get choked up too, or
more than they do.
Yeah.
My mum came to see me not so long back in a demonstrating, and there were some ladies at the front, and they all had their own packets of tissues, and they started to hand them out to the audience before I started. because the idea they were preparing in case they got sad or teared up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing with tears in a demonstration. People are not really sad. I think mm-hmm. there's this overwhelming sense of relief that loved ones do come back.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Have you noticed mediumship has changed from when you started? Was it 35 years ago or 39 years ago?
39 years.
Have you noticed it's changed because of technology or the state of affairs in the world, or is it about the same? Or I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, I think it's got to have changed.
Okay.
Some for the better, some not. I think there was, in my youth, there was some tremendous accuracy. There's no question. Okay. I was very lucky to watch the late Albert Best and Len Loban and Mary Duffy. These are just names to people I appreciate. Okay. Ursula Roberts. And these people were such high caliber. They would take to the stage, you would hear a pin drop, and they would start the demonstration. And it was just scintillatingly wonderful. And so that accuracy, I think, is something that I remember beautifully. And on occasion, I see it. I still see that level of accuracy, not only in my own work, certainly, but also in the work of others. So the accuracy certainly is there. I think we almost make it less religious now. My youth, you know, there was a lot more onus on the religion of spiritualism, where people demonstrated under that umbrella. Now, you know, I think things have moved on. I was going to say moved on, because, you know, I'm lucky enough to work with some Hindu mediums and some Jewish mediums. And so that, and I love that, because it takes away the need to put the mediumship in any one religion, because it belongs to all. And so it becomes less religious, more direct to a degree. I think sometimes we're prepared to say certain things now that maybe we wouldn't have said before, and all within reason, you know, because one of the best things someone ever told me was, as a medium, everything we offer our clients or audience members, of course, should enable them and not disable them. So yeah. We have to be cautious here, not to cause worry or concern. But I think I prefer the more direct approach to mediumship, clearer messages offered, and on occasion, you know, better evidence offered too.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't mind me saying, I was just sharing with a group I was teaching today. I was saying, you know, this morning I've done 4 one-to-one readings. One, listen, you wouldn't dine out on that. There'll be no awards offered. But right. The other 3 today were just so warm and real. This old man, his wife had just died, and it was just,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, like, I don't say textbook mediumship, because it sounds like I'm being egotistical, but the power ran through fast. She came through easily, name and feeling and when and how. And then the other 2 were much the same. Yesterday, I did 4 one-to-ones. The first 3, I thought, well, I need to give up. I need to join the monastery. Do you know, this is not happening anymore. And the last 1 before was back to normal again. And I think when that happens, it's great for your ego, that's for sure. But it also shows that things have to be in alignment for good mediumship truly to happen. Can't be exhausted. But also it's so much more on the openness and willingness to experience of the living that we're working with. They're open, and with a story to tell, it generally works very much.
Yes, I've noticed that with my own work. When someone's open and their energy is on a different frequency, or they're very positive, I've noticed that I get more messages from them. I don't know if that happens for you.
Easily, by far.
Yeah, right.
And it, easy to tell.
Exactly. I've noticed that.
I totally agree. And I think, of course, the thing we have to let other people know is, when they come to see the likes of us or any kind of consultation, it's at least a 3-way process. You know, the reader, the recipient, and those who gather to inspire. And if the recipient is closed or critical or help, negative.
Right.
No, you're exact. You've had the experience. What happens is through their nose, or I don't know, or maybe this kind of thing, our human, the reader's human, rises, takes precedence, and almost whispers to itself, get out of here, it's going really bad. And we start to close down. But when we have recipients who are equally as honest with us, but they'll say, well, I don't think so, dear. I'm not so sure, dear. Those responses give us then the power to really start to move into that energy and start being accurate. But when people are no, 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 and because it's, you know, it is very much an active, it's an intimate act, giving and receiving a contact. It's almost like asking someone, do you want to waltz, dear? Would you like to dance with me? And they look at us with dirty looks and say, what? Who? How? You back off. You know, there is no waltz after all. So, I can go on a lot about that. But, you know, we almost need to train our recipients before they come how to get the best connection.
Yes, exactly. Is it because when they're negative, it's a lower vibrational energy? And if they're positive, it's probably a higher vibrational energy. And is it because the vibration in the spirit world connects more to a higher vibration? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think that's certainly valid. But I think also there's a fundamental difference here. If the medium feels under duress, if the medium feels uncomfortable, the medium feels scrutinized, their human stays very much in situ. So I always talk about the soul of self and the human of self. And I'm born really from a lovely girl I used to mentor years ago. And she was maybe went out for a bar or, you know, met a boy or something. And then she'd look at me with a smile on her face and say, Tony, don't judge me. It wasn't my fault. It was my human. And it made me laugh so much when she said it. And I thought, crumbs, I get this now. We have the human self and the star self or the light self.
Yeah.
And I think the job here in all developing mediums here is to recognize if our human feels under duress, it holds the soul within back. It doesn't display itself. If we can encourage and feel easy and allow the mediums to feel honored and helped and whole, etc., then there's so much more opportunity and chance here for them to rise high on a soul level and become the master one.
What motivates you to continue teaching and mentoring aspiring mediums after so many years in the field?
Thank you again. I just think the work's important, you see.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm 55 next week, so I'm not saying I'm over the hill yet. But, you know, realistically, in service, God willing, maybe another 20 years, and then I'm done, you know, pretty much. I mean, they may will me out for, you know, some wonderful demonstration once in a while. So it's important that I leave a legacy behind me of good workers that can continue their good work. And so, you know, I think last year I may have had something like 250 students went. This year, maybe slightly more. And they may only seem to one group, because I teach most nights. I've got some students that are with me that are with me five nights a week in different classes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a fascinating thing to be able to teach and then mentor others. But now, of course, I'm teaching people how to teach and I'm teaching people how to mentor. So, you know, it's gone full circle because, again, I feel best placed to be able to do it. So why I do it, I think it's fascinating. And I think when you become aware of your own longevity, you want to be able to leave something positive behind you. And this is my world. This is what I know. If I could do something else, I'd be doing that. But this is all I've ever known. And so I have to pass on what I've got while I can.
Your books have been highly acclaimed and widely read. Can you tell us about your writing process and the messages you aim to convey through your books?
Well, yeah, books were interesting. The last book I wrote, I've written four so far.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one is a little while ago now. I did four in quite, you know, close succession. Process, note taking, jotting down information. I'm a horrible journaler. So bits of paper everywhere, in the car, in a bag. Honestly, it was like a process in itself. And then I would start to type. I'm not the fastest typer. So I was approached by a book publisher, Hodder and Stoughton. They're a very well-known book publishers. And they very kindly offered me an advance when I was quite young. And they also insisted that I meet with a lady who would essentially ghost write the first book, you see, which I did. And she was a really nice lady. And so we worked together with the notes and the ramblings and the things that I'd already typed up, which seemed to take an age. And she gave it flow. That's what she gave it. She gave it readability and flow. But I always say to everyone when they ask when it was first out, did you write it or not? It's all my work. But, you know, I needed someone cleverer than I to make sure that the reader wouldn't get lost between one discombobulated statement or the other. And so I've done a bit of traveling with the other books too. You know, there's a few chapters of Lincoln Cathedral and when I had a home in Gran Canaria, which is like a Spanish island in the Atlantic. And so I've traveled a bit to write. I've scribbled away for a long time to get my thoughts and feelings onto paper. And I did say after my last book, I'm never doing another one again. It's far too much hard work. I'm just now working on the treatment for a new book. It fills the time.
Your instructional audiobook, such as Getting to Know Your Guides and Healing Your Wounded Soul, offers, you know, valuable tools for spiritual growth. What inspired you to create these resources?
Well, I was approached again, quite simply, my approach by a great company called New World Music, and they'd known of my work.
Yeah.
And asked if I would create an audio of Sitting in the Power, which I did, which has done incredibly well. The amount of people that have done great things to that, you know, that music. And the meditation itself. But the weirdest thing, again, I never to this day remember doing it. It felt like it had nothing to do with me. So that was a strange entirely. But why did I do it? It was when I was approached, and I feel it's just a wonderful way of getting to thousands of people to give them an experience. And I thought, not that I don't know what, you know, that I suppose I just felt this, what a great way of helping people to develop all over the world if they could access this deep. And that kind of thing is your legacy to the world.
Can you elaborate on your lifelong connection to spirit and how it has influenced your personal and professional life?
Yeah, well, it's always been with me. Even since I was very, very young, as a child, I would know things, see things, but not in a way that set me out as a strange child, but I just got used to not saying too much to anybody. It shaped my life in as much as taking me all around the world. I'm very, very lucky to be in fabulous places like Tasmania and New Zealand and Australia, extensively in the States. Mm-hmm. And so it's become now, and this is going to sound really egotistical, but it's become a mission. First, it's become my mission. It's become my world. And sometimes I struggle a little bit because I've got your children now and my partner now. And so just to find the balance, really, of family time, home time, animal time, parents time, and doing the work. But I pretty much work every day doing something. So how has it shaped my life? It is my life. I think it's just... Yeah. It's what you do. It becomes so intrinsic to your survival.
What do you see as a future of mediumship and spiritual communication?
I think it will change, needs to change, has to change, no question. And this was, I was working in Ireland this last weekend, and I was talking to a group of mediums in Dublin, and I was just saying, evolve, because the generation will seek you out next are possibly 10 to 15 years of age now. So if we read for them in 10 years' time, that's about right. And those children of tomorrow are not going to be as impressed with a February birthday, the color purple, and, you know, what does chocolate mean to you, dear? It's just not going to fill them. So I wonder whether mediumship, as I know it, will move more into the inspired state, more channeling, more feedback, more trance work in this way. I wonder whether essentially the messages will be given directly from the horses.
Yeah, right. And your training school for aspiring mediums offers a unique opportunity for students. What do you consider to be the most important principles or practices for budding mediums to learn?
I think when they first come in, you really want to assess them for kindness, warmth, honest, those kinds of things. Balance, feet on the ground, head in the stars. So you're looking for basic things to begin with before you even consider talent and ability or anything like that. And I think that this is going to sound a mean thing again to say that sometimes we have people in development that have not worked on themselves. You know, they come in very distracted. So you're looking for someone that wants to work on themselves, wants to work with kindness, wants to work with empathy, want to work with joy. And very quickly, they start to evolve into excellent mediums because their heart's in it. Their heart is in the right space with it all. And I try to do it, as you say, in my teaching space, which is in my local town. And again, and so much more online now.
Yeah.
Because it is so convenient for the students to get into one, you know, to get to the space and still, you know, facilitate their own kids' mothers.
So you offer in-person classes and online, right? Correct. Okay, great. That's wonderful. And what challenges do you commonly encounter when teaching others about mediumship and how do you address them?
Well, challenges, you never really know. I mean, it depends on an individual. Sometimes someone doesn't do it as quite as I expected them to, or the exercise was clear and they've gone off and done their own thing. So over these years, I've simply said, look, this is the exercise. This is the assignment. Do with it as you wish. Feel free to expand upon it. Feel free to do more with that. So I think going forward, we just need to give people permission to become co-creators with the spirit, use their intuition, this kind of thing, because the spirit needs so many more of us to do the work.
Okay. Is it true the more you practice, the better you get?
Yes, certainly. Like a muscle.
Okay.
Hard work and endeavor. And I think, because the more you do, the less. When I was very young and didn't do much work at that time, the alarm would go, I'd run off to do a demonstration. And if it went very, very well, I would be glad. If it went terrible, I'd be absolutely lost for the entire time, for the entire week, rather. So I think, I'm not sure even if I'm answering your question terribly well.
That's
but
okay.
My brain sort of hits a thread and I just follow it as best I can.
Yeah, no worries.
But the idea being that modern day mediumship needs to evolve. It needs to include a balance of psychic knowingness, steership, and understanding. And we, the mediums, we need to be working on ourselves. So it's never just about how psychic or how mediumistic we might be. Is also about and needs to be how good and how essentially how we have embraced our own divinity in the work too. Otherwise, the human rises and ego becomes a bad thing because people are not working on themselves. They imagine themselves as the next Messiah because they are marvelous medium. But we're just a tiny cog in all of this.
Right, exactly. And you said mediumship is like a muscle. If it is like a muscle and you've been doing this for 39 years, how do you prepare and hone your own skills? Like before an event, how do you prepare and what do you do every day to keep in the mediumship world or whatever, you know, to keep your skills up? Yeah.
I think you need to find balance. There's no question. So my children have ponies, which I do. Obviously, they wanted them. I do them. I've got two dogs. I've got a cat. I've got the chickens.
Yeah.
My daily routine is mucking out, being with the animals, walking the animals, grooming the animals, picking out hooves. And that might take me an hour and a half in the morning. But that grounds me. does after the school run, that grounds me very, very, very nicely, which I'm pleased about. But then when you talk about, you know, staying into that feeling, I've got a big feeling about the moon. So I'm fascinated by the moon. And so I'll finish usually my late, you know, for classes and whatnot. And I'll sit outside for a while and just watch the moon. And I sometimes feel that gives me such a power, you see, in itself. So, and then preparation, of course, for a demonstration. I don't do too much. I remain as calm as I can, as open as I can, as mindful of the situation I'm getting myself into with that demonstration. I'm gently calling friends, come close to me, friends, come closer. Come closer to the world than you've ever come before. So I'm invoking a feeling, but I'm not doing meditation as such, but I'm very aware all day of what's to come.
Oh, wow. Can you ever turn this off, or is it difficult to?
Not at all. I find turning it off very easy. Very easy. And those that may struggle to turn it off, essentially, just go do something really boring. Go wash the kitchen floor for a while. You know, the mundane acts of things gives you the balance.
That's interesting. You're fascinated by the moon. Mm. I am too. Yeah, I've been learning about lunar astrology lately, lunar cycles. It's interesting. Yeah.
But I love that. I was telling my son about the waxing and the waning of the moon. And we live very near a reservoir. As certain conditions with the lights, you know, the moon's bright and whatnot, we'll drive by the reservoir on the way home just to see how the moon touches the water.
Wow.
And I just think it's just the most incredible sight.
It's beautiful. Your tours and media appearances have likely brought you into contact with diverse audiences. How do you adapt your approach to mediumship to connect with different people and energies?
Well, you've always got a group, a collective. So it's never one type of person anyway. Yeah. You might have some loud people, some students there, skeptics there. But it's always about the collective, if you like. So I think when I go out there, I sometimes do it. I don't even think about it. It just comes automatically. Be faster, be slower, be more serious, be more fun. And it's I'd like to think I'm right each time, but it's an intuitive feeling. You know, you know by being this way, you'll get the very most from this particular audience.
Yeah,
right, yeah, you're exactly. You're adapting energetically, so it's an instinctive.
And I'm just curious, how often do you work in front of a live audience?
Probably
a year.
About 100 times a year, I suppose.
Wow. Okay. So you're used to doing this. This is like old hat to you. And what role do you believe mediumship plays in the broader spiritual landscape, particularly in today's world?
I think it's less, I think it's not less important, but I think less people do it. So how important it is, don't know. It's a very welcome addition. It has the potential to save lives, change lives. I get all of that. But in the modern day spiritual world, I don't know. I think a lot's got to change within it. And it needs to be much broader in its understanding before the world will put up and listen.
Exactly. I'm hoping with Pluto in Aquarius for the next 20 years, we'll be more open to this because it's kind of going to change things astrologically. Pluto hasn't been in Aquarius since 1778. So there's going to be a lot of transformation.
Oh, well. Well, how is that possible?
Yeah. Can you share any advice for individuals who may be beginning their own journey into mediumship or spiritual development?
Yeah, I think, you know, laugh. Keep it ordinary. Okay. Keep it light. Don't get too intense. Mm-hmm. Recognize there's a smorgasbord of possibilities out there for everyone. And they're in a rather lucky position. You know, when I got involved, it was just really one thing we had to look at, which is mediumship. But now I do look at seership and star beings and therapeutic approach to mediumship and how to mentor your clients going forward, even if you're not so sure even now. So I think keep it eclectic, keep it light, have some fun with it. And draw good around you.
Yeah. And you do spirit or animal spirit communication or pet readings too?
Animals have always come to demonstrations.
Okay.
But now I'm teaching how to blend with animals in demonstrations and readings. That's been really interesting. That's given me a focus entirely, you know, and a different way to maybe consider it.
What has your experience been with reading animals? I'm just curious.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's a daily occurrence. It happens most days.
Mm-hmm.
So they invariably come because they can. They invariably come because they want to love. They want to be loved and be with their human sometimes. But you can get profound and wonderful animal communications. And I wrote about this in a book, so it's out there anyway. But a long, long time ago, I was reading at the College of Psychic Studies, which is in South Kensington in London. And a nice young man came to see me. I'd say it was a long while ago. And we sat in the flat upstairs for the one-to-one reading. Mm-hmm. And I remember finding the reading so difficult. Whoever I said I had, he didn't know. And it was just kind of grisly, really. And then I was about to say to the guy, look, this is not a working reading. Let's go back to reception. They'll give you a refund. You can go see somebody else.
Yeah.
And just as I sort of turned to him, and I saw energetically this big horse's head come over his shoulder. And I was so, you know, disappointed with my efforts on that particular occasion. And I remember saying to the guy, oh, just before you go, would you know anything about a horse? Oh, and then obviously from his reaction, he came for his horse.
Oh,
so he wasn't being negative. He just didn't know a lot about the normal or the humans, you know, you might consider. He was looking for his horse. And what I remember saying here clearly is the horse says he was, you were my very best friend. The horse said, you were my very best friend. Oh. And the man said out loud, please tell him he was my very best friend too. And when you've had readings like that, it's so pleasing because it also shows to everybody that animals are our friends and can come through, and they are certainly available in meetings.
When you do readings, I'm just curious, is there a certain time frame, like if somebody, an animal or a human passes, that is to be allowed before you can read or not? No.
The uses, I give it 3 weeks, and I think that's less for it and far more for the recipient just to get their head in gear, you see.
Right.
But I've read for people literally 40 minutes after they've passed. And then sometimes I've read for someone who's lost a husband a year ago and I struggled to find him. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the difficulty. But I think it's again about the availability of opportunity, but it's also very much about the openness of the living as well as the spirits.
Right, exactly. And I know there's different types of mediums. Do you have a certain type? Are you more of an emotional medium or a mental medium or a combination of all of them? Or I'm just curious.
Yeah. Well, when demonstrating, it's mental mediumship, you said.
Okay.
But I'm also a trance medium, so I do a lot of trance work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working on different concepts now to expand myself and others of, you know, the therapeutic approach to mediumship, etc. But what kind of medium am I? I think a hopeful one, maybe. But I am pretty much a trance demonstrating medium.
Do you have any projects coming up this year or anything you want people to know about? Really?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to Omega twice this year, which is upstate New York. But love a leg. Have you been there before?
No, I haven't. My friends have. I need to go.
It's great. So I'm there for trance intensive, and I go back then for International Mediumship Summit, which is me too. Projects online. I've got a program called How to Become a Mentor, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
It's showing people with the knowledge already how they can hold people energetically and move their students to a totally different space. So it's all about that support. Shamanic mediumship coming up. There's a lot of things going on. But people can always look at, they just simply look at tonystockwell.com and all.
Yeah, I'm interested in the shamanic mediumship. Would you mind explaining that? Because I'm interested in shamanism.
It's a shamanic approach to shamanism. The main idea here is, if I read for you and we imagine I see your grandfather, I would ask you, can you feel him? Yes, no. Let me facilitate it some other way you can feel him. So it will go on from there. The idea, I'm trying to bring my client to a space that they see what I see and hear what I hear, feel what I feel, but they're able to become like a wonderful participant. Mm-hmm. So they are engaging constantly with their own mediumship. So I don't know, really, we're just going to sit there, facilitate, but it becomes shamanistic the moment our client feels they're able to cooperate, collaborate, co-create. Dal's energetic.
You're both psychic and medium.
And I don't really see psychic as other people do. I think all psychic is the innate knowingness of our own human soul. The higher self feels things. Some of the information bubbles into our awareness, and we call it psychic because we're talking about earth life. But ultimately, it's just what you know. The terms that we use are somewhat confusing, but ultimately, it's what we know.
And then if someone wanted to book a reading with you, how would they do that if they're in the United States or they're anywhere in the world? Can you do it?
Just look on tonystottle.com, click on the readings. At the moment, there are no readings left for a little while, but then I think we put more up next month, to be fair, thank God. But they can just book in directly online. There's a facility.
Does it take place on Zoom or what's that?
So unless people, they can come to me, just a Zoom appointment. We send them the personal detail code, Zoom. But of course, if someone's willing to drive or fly over, they can do it in person.
Our tagline for the Electric Spirit podcast is igniting your spirit. What ignites your spirit, Tony?
Or personally or professionally, do you think?
Both. Either way, whatever you want to.
That is my spirit. Of course, are my kids. Kids and dogs. That's, of course, all of that. But over the last couple of weeks, I've been listening on YouTube to Brandi Carlile and Joni Mitchell. Voices, song, wonderfully clear, fabulous voices. That lifts me hugely.
Music, that's beautiful. Yeah, Joni Mitchell says, doesn't she have a song called Coyote? Yeah, I like her. Do you want to add anything else?
I think, thank you for having me on your show too. I think the idea with all of this for any developing, aspiring medium is just give it time, and you need time, because otherwise the ego rages. We start believing our own press. We've all done it. And my old tutor would always say, you're only ever as good as your last message.
Yeah, that's true.
My last message, I was marvelous. But if you'd asked me, yes, my last message, I wanted to shoot, something. It was just awful. So that's another thing entirely. But keeping it real, keeping a sense of humor, keeping family first.
I'm so glad you were here.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on.
This is great. Thank you so much. I'd love to have you back again.
Anytime. I think
you'll be around for a long time. Thank you so much, Tony.
Thank you for listening to the Electric Spirit Podcast with your host, psychic medium Jamie Lynn. Find us on Instagram at Electric Spirit Podcast. Be sure to join us next time. Recharging your energy. Recharging your magic. Recharging your spirit. Until then, ciao.